Hi, I'm Neva. I'm a compulsive eater. Can we all take a deep breath and have a moment of silence and say the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So, how many times this weekend have you had this entire quotation read to you? A couple? Just wondered if you wanted to hear it again. Okay. This is a quotation on acceptance from one of the stories in the back of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Well, when I was asked to speak at this convention, I immediately said yes, because that's one of the things that I was taught, you know, is when you're asked to do service and you're physically capable of doing it, to say yes. And then I was told that I got to speak twice. And she said to me, she said, well, on Friday night, we want you to spend about 45 minutes telling us your story. And then on Saturday, we want you to spend about the same amount of time talking to us about acceptance, our theme. And I just thought about my story for a second, and I said, well, that sounds appropriate. So I don't know all of what my higher power has to say through me tonight. I've found a couple of things in Voices of Recovery that spoke to me. I have written off and on some notes to myself over the past couple of weeks, and I may or may not use them. You know, and that's the way that my higher power works. So, actually, I am going to start with one of them. Last night when I told you my story, I mentioned to you that my husband passed away suddenly at the beginning of November, and this was back in 2011, so it's almost 7 years now. Anyway, it was on November 2nd. And so, just kind of on a whim today, I opened Voices of Recovery to November 2nd. And I'm going to read you the quote from the top of the page. We thought everything would be fine if only our bosses would recognize our worth, if only our spouses would give us the attention we needed, if only our children were well behaved. And I thought, well, you know, that is one of the signs of my non-acceptance. You know, the if onlys. You know, if only I had been a little bit more assertive in insisting that my husband go see a doctor again before we left on that vacation. If only I had been paying more attention to him and his symptoms. You know, if only, if only, if only. And that kind of thinking doesn't get me anywhere, and except maybe closer to the next binge. And so, you know, that's kind of what part of this part of the story is about, is there's all those if onlys that I could dig out of my story that I told you last night. And so one of the statements that came for me when I was writing was, you know, this was not what I had planned for my life. You know, I talked to you about my white picket fence dream, and you know, and there were all those things, those boxes that I wanted to check that never got checked, or they got checked, but then somebody came by and erased them. And when I focus on what I don't have, I miss out on what I do have. This morning I was asked at the assembly to lead the meditation for the reps. And for that meditation, I read a quotation out of the Appendix C in the Overeaters Anonymous second edition book. And what that quotation has to do with is the difference between surrender and submission. And this is, you know, these appendices are letters that were written by professionals, healthcare professionals, and spiritual professionals who were observers of OA early on and what was going on for compulsive eaters who were getting recovery in Overeaters Anonymous. And this author talks about how the act of surrender was not just giving up, but accepting that a power greater than ourselves, accepting a power greater than ourselves, which reduces our ego, and we admit our need for outside help. And then it says, acceptance on the conscious level is submission, which translates to, I can't conquer this reality at the moment, but I'm keeping this little thought in the back of my mind that maybe someday I will be able to. I'll have power over it. So I'm acquiescing to what is, what I can't do right in the moment, but I'm just waiting for my opportunity to change it. I can't handle my compulsive eating on my own. When, anyway, then acceptance is when it gets to the unconscious level, and then it's surrender. And then the admission that I can't handle my compulsive eating on my own is, that's the end of the discussion. And that's when I start to take the suggestions that this program offers me and the opportunity for growth. Yeah, you know, just it comes down to really simple things. You know, I have to get a sponsor. I have to work the steps. I have to go to meetings. I have to, you know, use the other tools that are offered. I do things that at first glance I think they're just kind of simplistic and trite and not very interesting. And if I do them often enough, they just get boring and I start taking them for granted, and then they don't really have very much power for me. That's what my conscious mind thinks. But then I realize as time passes, and you know, it's definitely one day at a time, that they become more than just things that I'm doing by habit or by rote, that suddenly, or maybe gradually, but the suddenly part is that I get up one day and I realize that something that was really irritating to me yesterday doesn't really bother me that much today. And if I'm paying attention, I realize that, well, you know, maybe saying the Serenity Prayer over and over again really does have a positive effect in my life. Maybe going to the same meetings every week over and over and over again and seeing the same people over and over and over again, even when they share the same thing over and over and over again, you know, that somehow some of that sinks in beneath my skin and gets into my bones and my soul and really starts to change me. I get compliments, and I've gotten a couple in the last 24 hours on how strong I am and how the person can't imagine going through what I've gone through, or they can't even imagine me standing up here and telling that story without breaking down. And I thank them politely because I don't really want to go through this long explanation. But, you know, part of my story last night was that I grew up in a home with alcoholism, and part of my coping mechanism was to be silent and to be still and to not be seen very much. And that survival mechanism from childhood has served me well in being in situations like this where inwardly I am quaking. But I can find, you know, I have that focus within me to be able to put two or three words together without breaking down or going completely blank. And I've had other opportunities through my life to use this skill. So, you know, the things that happen to us early in life that seem very tragic, you know, very sad, very disappointing, you know, very hurtful, sometimes can be turned around and changed into strengths that we can use both to help ourselves and to help other people, you know, our loved ones and others. And so I think there was a long period of time for me where I showed this strength and this calm and this whatever you want to call it, where I was not really in acceptance. I was in that submission state. I was doing the best I could in the situation that I was in, and inwardly I was plotting revenge. I still, every once in a while, get caught in that. But it's kind of funny now because I catch myself sooner and sooner and sooner. And sometimes I will, the other thing that I have done is to, when something goes wrong, start plotting the trail ahead just that'll still get me to where I want to go. And a very recent example of that was that on Thursday, I flew here from Tucson. And the flight that I had a connection in Dallas-Fort Worth. It was kind of an interesting route to fly to get from Tucson to Colorado Springs, but, you know, I made the, you know, I looked up the flights that were available, and this one seemed like the most practical time-wise, price-wise, all of that. And so I booked that flight, and I got everything, all my ducks in a row, and I got down to the airport on time on Thursday morning, and got onto the plane, and just about the time we were supposed to be taking off, the pilot comes on the intercom and apologizes. There's a valve to one of the gas tanks in one of the wings that won't open up so they can fill up the gas tank before we take off. So they have to wait for a mechanic to come out and manually open the valve so they can fill up the gas tank and we can take off. So they do that, and it takes about 15 or 20 minutes, and then, you know, we're finally cleared for takeoff, and he's saying to us, well, don't worry. He says, you know, we're only 20 minutes behind, and I can make that up on the route. And so, you know, I'm like, okay, you know, this, I'm just taking it as it comes. This is what's going on. So anyway, we actually do get to Dallas and hit the tarmac just about the time that we're supposed to, and, you know, people around me all have connecting flights, and I have a connecting flight, and, you know, we're all saying, well, you know, we still got this much time and stuff. So we get up there, and we're going cruising toward the gate, and he stops, and we wait a few minutes, and then he finally says, well, the plane that's at the gate that we're supposed to go to has the outer door won't close. So they have to call a mechanic over to see if they can get the door closed so that that plane can take off, and then we can go up to the gate. So, you know, at that point, you know, people are on the phone rebooking flights and, you know, seeing when their flight's taking off and everything, and I'm sitting there, and in my head, I'm going, well, I'm going to miss my connection, so I'm going to get off the plane. Well, maybe I won't miss my connection if this gets fixed quick. If we get off the plane soon enough, I just have to find that screen and figure out where my gate is, and maybe I'll be lucky and my connection is close and I won't have that far to go and I'll make it and they'll get the luggage there. And then I'm, you know, and I'm doing all this mental acrobatics, you know, about what's going to happen. And just, you know, like this little voice in my head's going, Eva, why don't you just wait and see what happens next? And so, you know, so anyway, they couldn't get that door fixed. So that flight had to unload. Those people all missed their connections, and they had to rebook a flight. We finally got up to another gate that they found and got off. And then, you know, I had to trek with all these people down to this customer service gate with the long, sinewy line. And, you know, we're standing there, and people, you know, some people are booking flights on their phones, and I'm not trying to do that because they still have to wait to get up to the customer service person to get their boarding pass anyway. And so finally I get up there, and they book me on another flight, and I get a boarding pass, and I get over to that gate, and I've got like 2 hours, and so I think I got up, you know, went to the restroom, went and found something to eat, came back, sat down, I had a book to read. And then they start boarding this flight, and I was just, you know, I was like so grateful that the gate didn't change in 2 hours, you know. It was like, because you could hear the intercom at the airport, well, gate, passengers waiting at C-11, you have to go down to C-15, it's like, you know, like, and I was just like, you know, keeping my fingers crossed, but, you know, I wasn't worrying too much about it, but anyway, you know, again, it was just like, just doing the next right thing, and so finally it was time to board the plane, and I get up, and I'm waiting for my group to be called, and waiting, you know, watching the people in groups ahead of me go by, and there's Brenda. She's right there. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to be on this plane by myself. You know, you know, so So we said hi, and she got on the plane, and I got on the plane in my group, and it turns out we were like two rows apart across the aisle from each other, so we could actually chat a little bit before the plane took off. It's just one of those things where, you know, it's really comfortable to know that there's a fellow recovering compulsive eater in whatever situation you're with, in with you in whatever situation you're in. And, knowing that I was going to, you know, be talking this weekend and it was just, I just kept choosing. My mind would wander, and I would do my own little chitty-chatty thing. But I just kept choosing to get back into the moment and just do the next indicated thing. And I pretty much got here the rest of the way here without too much incident. And I had kind of the normal, I think, amount of nervousness going into the assembly today. The last assembly in the spring, I attended, but I served as the substitute for the recording secretary. It's just gotten to be one of those things that, you know, when somebody asks me to do something and I'm available, I'll just show up and do it. I don't even worry about, I may worry some. I get scared. But sometimes I'm just not sure that I'm going to get what I need to do the job, and I always do. So I'm learning. You know, acceptance is like not an instantaneous, you go from not accepting to totally accepting. It's kind of an incremental thing, and I have to practice it. And my higher power has given me plenty of opportunity to practice it. The trip here was an example. And, you know, I don't even want to think about tomorrow morning yet. There's going to be snow. The weather people are pretty accurate about these things nowadays. And I will dress as warmly as I'm able to without looking like a snow person. But I will pray that the plane will actually be able to take off and get me back towards Dallas. This is life. This is what life is like. And I don't want to use the if onlys. You know, if I had had all of this wisdom and experience back when I was going through some of the things that I was going through 20, 30 years ago, I might have handled it better, but maybe I wouldn't. I have no way of predicting any of that. The very most difficult thing for me is acceptance of myself. I think it has to do with all of this fear that comes up, with being nervous about speaking, with being nervous about being the trustee and sitting up there with the steering committee, being an equal when I go to board of trustee meetings, and one thing about OA is you get into a room of other compulsive eaters And titles don't mean anything. Job descriptions don't mean anything. Length of abstinence doesn't mean anything. Length of time in the program doesn't mean anything. Because we're all just compulsive eaters trying to get better. And we're here to support each other. You know, so... But self-acceptance is really hard still. I'm still working on that. It was really awful in childhood, and it was awful early in my life. I took responsibility in my mind for my children's illnesses. You know, I was devastated that I couldn't figure out something to do to make it better for them. You know, I couldn't heal them. I couldn't save their lives. I couldn't. I couldn't change what was. And people would suggest gratitude, people would suggest counting blessings, and those things were all just empty for me. Today, when those negative thoughts come up, when I start blaming myself for things, when I start questioning whether I'm capable of doing what I'm supposed to do in a half hour from now or a week from now or however long it is, because really there's no time limit on worrying, is there? I can start way ahead of time. Just keep going. I can wait till the last minute and just be petrified. But I can turn those things around today. You know, listening to that little voice, the one that starts, that just pops up and interrupts that inner critic, that interrupts my worrying, that interrupts my planning on what's going to happen next, the one that's trying to really get it all put together, because that's what makes me safe, as though that's what makes me safe, because it's not really. I've learned in this program that other people that show up in my life are mirrors to me. You know, if I'm interacting with someone and there's something about them that's disturbing to me, I realize that that's something that I need to look at in myself. That keeps me moving forward in my recovery. If I accept that I have these things to work on, that I have these issues of, if I'm judging somebody else, I'm judging myself. If I'm critical of something that's going on, I'm critical of, myself. That distorted view that I have of myself is something that I can continue to work on. Recently, I've been going through the steps again, and I've got a new different sponsor than I've had before, and she was not somebody that I was initially attracted to because of something that I felt like I needed right now. In fact, what I first saw in her was an attitude that I kind of felt a little irritated by. But then when somebody else that I thought that I wanted for to do this with turned me down, I this was the next person that my higher power pointed me at, and so I went ahead and asked, and I've been working the steps with her, and I have done a really, really thorough fourth step. I brought several different resources into it. I've done, you know, dozens of pages of writing. Consequently, I'm still working on the fifth step. This woman is giving so much time to me to walk me through this inventory. It's amazing. And what I'm getting out of it is I'm going deep. It's all about all of this inner judgment and criticism that I have of myself. And where I'm not able to do it myself, she's helping me pull these assets out of the pile and showing me things about myself, positive things about myself that I never would admit. And what I'm seeing is, and this is still kind of a scary part for me, I'm not sure what it is. You know, one of the things in me from childhood is I'm always afraid the other shoe is going to drop. You know, it's like if I get too optimistic about something, something bad's going to happen. Something's going to mess it up. And I kind of get that feeling a little now and then with this fifth step, you know, that when I acknowledge something positive that's coming up, you know, that maybe that's going to be proven wrong. But so far what I'm finding about it is that my higher power is giving me the ability to see myself in action using those assets. You know, so that like when on that plane I start getting into my monkey mind and that inner voice reminds me that I can just focus on what's in front of me right now. And I start, and I listen to it, that I can say, oh, you know, this is a place where I'm able to let go of that self-criticism. You know, that I'm able to let go of that having to know everything ahead of time so that I can be safe. It, you know, it may not last very long. In fact, it doesn't last very long sometimes, especially if other people around me are upset. That was one of the things that was difficult about, you know, like being closed into a plane full of people that are all upset about, you know, missing connecting flights and stuff, is that, you know, I tend to absorb other people's stuff after a while. But, you know, but because I've been working this program, and you know, because I'm working the steps again, and this process is fresh in my mind, I can see, you know, I can catch myself quicker, and I can see my way back to a place where I can, you know, get some peace, get some quiet. Say the serenity prayer again, even though, you know, that critic in me says, oh, God, that doesn't work. But it does. I know one of my other character flaws that is also part of this growing process is that I've always needed, I don't know how I'm doing. So I've always needed other people to tell me how I'm doing. And I I'm not extroverted enough to chase people around and ask them most of the time. But I care way too much. You know, so any little criticism tends to be a painful event. And what I've noticed about that recently, especially in this new surface position that I have, is that I get to practice. I get to practice reminding myself over and over again that if you're unhappy about something and you come to complain to me about it, that it's not about me. And at least most of the time, it's not about me. I always check, you know, see what I'm doing, if it might be about me, but usually it's not about me. But that's easier to say in my logical mind than it is in the feelings. And I'm still trying to practice that. To practice accepting my powerlessness. This new sponsor gave me something really interesting, a daily assignment to do. She asked me if every day in my journaling I would make a list of things that I'm powerless over and a list of things I'm grateful for. And it's been interesting watching that evolve. And to a great extent, my list of powerlessness has been reduced down to everything. I'm powerless over everything except my own attitude, words, and actions in this moment. You know, because I can't predict what I'm going to say 5 minutes from now, and I can't remember what I said 5 minutes ago. And then another strange thing happened with the gratitude list. I started looking at the, you know, I put down my G, you know, with a dash, you know, and what I'm, you know, I'm going to list what I'm grateful for. And I started thinking about the past 24 hours. And it was like I started listing the things that were challenging. You know, not the things that I love, the things that were beautiful, the things that people said that were nice. You know, those, you know, of course I'm grateful for those. But what about being grateful for the missed connection and the opportunity to practice being in the moment and just doing the next right thing? You know, what about the opportunity to be the person to get up and lead the assembly in a meditation for the first time? You know, those are challenging things for me, but they help me grow. You know, if I'm willing to be present with them and do the footwork, they help me grow. So next assembly, the meditation won't be quite so difficult. If I miss another connection on the way home, I'll probably laugh about it. At least I will if I can get out of the snow first. You know, so every moment and every challenge and every little pain or big pain that comes along is really an opportunity for surrender, an opportunity for acceptance. It's been a slow journey for me. I didn't have one of those white light experiences when I came into recovery. I've had to work for this, and I'm still working for it. Because if I stop doing this work, if I stop coming to meetings, if I stop doing service, if I stop following my food plan one day at a time, if I stop using the tools, stop reading the literature, stop journaling about what I'm grateful for or powerless over today, if I stop those things, I'll go right back to where I was. You know, because that woundedness is still inside of me. I still have the scars. The pain is still waiting to be felt. And sometimes it surfaces, and then when it does, I'm hopeful now that it's just another reminder that I have to follow these practices that I do. I've been, you know, I went through different pieces of literature in the last couple of weeks and made some notes and did some writing about things. And I realized that, you know, it is so much about living in today and living in the moment. And a few days before I left, I was doing a little bit of writing, and so I'm just going to read a little bit of it here. Recovery encourages me to uncover and face the truth about myself. Reality is not always pretty. Maybe happiness is an unrealistic expectation. Today I will be content with the moments of awe and joy life presents to me, watching the waning crescent moon at 4 a.m. before the light of dawn engulfs it, rubbing the soft belly of an exuberant dog who loves me, planting seeds for a winter garden, finishing a good book, being thanked for my share after a meeting, a last late rosebud opening on the bush outside my bedroom window. And when I share my darkest secret with my sponsor, and she says, in all honesty, I did that too. Maybe acceptance is just knowing that while I'm often alone, I need not be lonely. And I will close with this. Regret nothing. Thank you.